Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, I'm Freddie Sayers, and this is Unheard. Back in March, everyone's world suddenly changed.
From this evening, I must give the British people a very simple instruction. You must stay at home.
So on day one of lockdown, we launched Lockdown TV, a place where we could gather experts, scientists, writers, politicians, thinkers, to try to help us understand what was going on in this strange moment and what kind of world we were going to get at the end of it. And now, due to popular demand, here we are in podcast form. Welcome to Lockdown TV.
Over the weekend, a letter was sent to the Prime Minister, signed by over 1,200 church leaders from all sorts of different denominations here in the UK, complaining about the concept of vaccine passports and raising some serious ethical concerns. And we have two of their original signatories here to discuss it with us. Dr. William Philip of the Tron Church in Glasgow.
We are simply saying it's impossible theologically for the Christian Church to close its doors.
And Dr. Jamie Franklin, who is curate of St. George in the Meadow in Nottingham.
I'm a curate. I'm the bottom of the food chain. I've only been ordained for less than 2 years. But there's such a dearth of leadership that I felt like it was necessary for me to do something.
Hello to you both.
Good morning.
So, William, if we could start with you, what is your main impetus for organising this letter? What is the thing you're most worried about to do with vaccine passports?
We've made three basic points in the letter. The first is simply that it's illogical medically because of all the things that we know. But we're more concerned with the fact that it's immoral and it's divisive in terms of society, because there's a very real risk here that we create an underclass of people, a kind of medical apartheid of those who, for whatever reason, have not been vaccinated. And there are many reasons why people can't be or won't be vaccinated, and maybe a small minority. But there's a real danger there. And there's also the thin end of the wedge, because why stop with COVID vaccination? There are lots of other infectious diseases. There are many that are more infectious than COVID. There are lots of other medical conditions as well. And then, of course, finally, in particular, we are simply saying it's impossible theologically for the Christian Church to close its doors to those who have been branded by society in our particular time as being socially undesirable. Is absolutely anathema to the Christian gospel. That would be like the Lord Jesus Christ standing up and saying, "Well, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, except those of you who are sick, except the blind, except the lepers, except those who are tax collectors and sinners, and so on. You've got to produce your passport." So it's absolutely impossible theologically, and that's really, I suppose, where it hits home for us. But we're concerned with the wider issues, obviously.
Jamie, so a lot of the signatories of the letter were from either independent churches or Presbyterian ministries. What's your take on that? Why was it so relatively less popular among a formal Church of England groups?
Well, I think there were quite a lot of Anglican priests who signed the letter. So I wouldn't necessarily say that we were disproportionately underrepresented, but what I would say is that we haven't been supported by the hierarchy of the Church of England, or indeed any hierarchy. I regard this really as in origin and in its execution a bottom-up grassroots movement. Many of us have been extremely frustrated, both within the church and also in society as well, with what we see really as a considerable lack of Christian leadership over the last 12 months. We really feel that senior church leaders in across all denominations have essentially done is they've given an imprimatur to the diktats of the government and of the secular, unelected technocrats who appear to be running things at the moment, and people are extremely frustrated with this. And we, quite frankly, Freddie, it shouldn't fall to somebody like me to be involved in doing something like this. I'm a curate. I'm the bottom of the food chain. I've only been ordained for less than 2 years. But there's such a dearth of leadership that felt like it was necessary for me to do something. This is the message of the church is not simply to obey the government, but it's that Jesus Christ has conquered death, and he is the answer to death. In the words of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the great German theologian, death reveals the world is not as it should be, but it stands in need of redemption. That should be the message of the church. And this is the message that the church has singularly failed to produce over the last 12 months. So we really felt that we needed to do something.
So your kind of institutional leader ultimately is the Archbishop of Canterbury, who's been very strong on safety messaging. And he agreed to the churches closing their doors in the first lockdown. Were you already against that at the time? And was there any kind of movement against that? Because we understand we interviewed Tom Holland on this show, and he said it was the first time the churches in England had closed their doors since the interdiction of 1208. So that seems like quite a major step. What was happening back then?
Yeah, exactly. I think the historical view is really helpful on this. It's been 800 years since the churches have closed their doors to people. And the view was overwhelmingly that the church should have closed down. And then, of course, the Archbishop famously went beyond the law and banned priests from even entering the churches to pray and to celebrate the Eucharist. So I felt at the time that it was a mistake. I've been against the lockdown since the beginning, and I think that as a church, we made entirely the wrong decision. We should have resisted the churches being closed down, and we should have insisted on their remaining open to be a place of refuge and hope, a place where people could go to receive the sacraments, to hear the preaching of the gospel, and to be comforted in a time of need. I can't tell you the amount of people I've had contact with who have said to me that they've sought refuge in the church over the last 12 months, only to find a literal or metaphorical closed door. And I think it was a terrible mistake which may have catastrophic consequences for the Church of England going forward.
William, I mean, the argument against, both for the original church closures and now for vaccine passports, I suppose, is safety and protection of your congregation should be a paramount concern to a minister. Is there not a Christian argument saying that, yes, it's a shame and it's inconvenient, but the most important thing is to protect their health?
Well, a Christian argument could never say that physical health and protection is the paramount and ultimate thing. A Christian argument must say that eternal health is infinitely more important. And the Christian church has recognized that all through its history, which is why in times of plague in the past, going right back to the early centuries, it's been the Christian church that's been right in the midst at the heart of it, saving people, helping people. Yes, of course, we want to preserve people's physical health. Nobody's arguing for recklessness among the churches. Nobody's arguing for putting people in danger where that can be avoided. But we are arguing for a sense of proportionality. And if that proportionality of the relative importance of eternity versus the temporal doesn't come from the Christian church, then where is it going to come from? And I think that's the problem, that the message of the church has been collapsed into one of merely health and safety in a temporal way. It has entirely omitted to speak about hope and salvation. And that is a catastrophic failure of the institutional church. And that's why from early days in the pandemic, we in the church were shamed and embarrassed reading secular commentators, atheist commentators, asking the questions in the press, where is spiritual leadership in a time of crisis? And of course, in the past, the government and the population would look to the church for that leadership, and it would receive it. It hasn't received it this time, and many in the church have been ashamed of that, and many in the population have been deprived of that. And that's the real issue. So we're not, of course, talking about recklessness, but we are talking about the place for hope and the place for the primary message of the church, which is one of salvation. And that must come first. It must come above everything else. We all agree that the NHS has been vitally important. Nobody has said close hospitals because we recognize physical health is important. But if the church itself doesn't recognize that it is even more important than hospitals for the body, then we really do have a problem. And that's why many, many, many church leaders from real churches, from grassroots churches, have been wanting to make this point and be heard when our national leaders have failed to do that.
Do you think it's partly a sort of organizational thing to do with the fact that the Church of England as the national church is sort of semi-governmental in some sense, so it can't be seen to break with official government advice, and that's why more voices like yours that are separate from that are able to speak freely? Do you think that's what's going on?
The Church of England bishops had absolutely no problem whatsoever with denouncing Brexit in a very enthusiastic manner. So that is a justification for this. I think that it's an inconsistent justification. The fact is that we're not a state church, you know, we're not like the Reichschurch of the 1930s. We are an established church. And the metaphor that I would like to use is that we're not a thermometer just simply telling the temperature of the culture, but we're a thermostat. We're supposed to have an influence on the culture, not simply to follow the culture and to follow the government. And when the government are doing something which we regard as wrong or immoral or deceitful, it is our duty to call the government out for those things and then think less as an abdication of our responsibility.
Were you surprised by how many signatories that letter got? Do you feel like there is more of a groundswell of dissent in the Church of England than you would see from the leadership?
But perhaps. I mean, it's very difficult for me to say, but my feeling is that I think that this issue with vaccine passports may be crossing a line for people, which they're uncomfortable with, and perhaps they would have been able to go up to a certain point previously. You know, we put up with an awful lot in churches, obviously the closures, but masks, you know, no singing, social distancing, all sorts of things which have tied vicars and priests up in all sorts of bureaucratic and administrative tangles. But I think when you say to people who are genuine Christian ministers that there is a possibility that the government may try and force us to exclude people from churches on the basis of whether or not they've had a certain medical treatment, I think that is crossing a line for lots and lots of sincere people. And I think that this may be one step too far, and that they're now willing to say, you know, this far and no further, this is unreasonable. I think many people can also see the illogicality of this, that this doesn't even make sense, even according to the government's own logic. If the vaccine...
Finding your perfect home was hard. But thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
vaccines protect people, then the status of people who are unvaccinated is basically irrelevant. So there is no need to do this, and we cannot do this anyway, because it completely contradicts everything we believe about the gospel, everything we believe about Jesus and the scriptures and our role as priests. So I think lots of people see that, and that they are happy to now say this far and no further. Yeah.
William, do you think it's going to work? It seems like this issue of vaccine passports has triggered somewhat of a backlash from a surprising coalition of voices. We've had people on the left of the Labour Party right through to Libertarian Tories and now church leaders such as yourself. Do you think the pushback is going to work?
Well, it's difficult to be sure. I hope it will. I think in America, it's already been decided that they won't do this. I think on the continent of Europe, there is now such resistance in some countries and such distrust of vaccines in any case that the uptake is going to be severely dented. I mean, there's been such chaos caused by politicians on the continent. If governments had wanted to go to find a way to mess up their vaccination programs, they really could hardly find a better one than the playing of politics that has been done on this. So I think it's going to be very difficult in many countries to remotely get to the kind of uptake that would allow this to happen. So I hope it will, and I hope it. I agree with Jamie. I think this has been a big issue, but it's not. I don't think this has been the first one. We've had thousands of people writing letters previously to the Prime Minister and to First Ministers about the idea of church closures. And in Scotland, we were still by law not allowed to meet to worship until just a few weeks ago. I was part of a group of clergy that brought a judicial review against the Scottish government and won that because people saw that this was an enormous infringement of human rights. And I think that's really at the heart of this. The response to this pandemic has been so extreme that it's transgressed into the whole area of what it actually means to be human. We've got totally confused about what it means to be human, what it means to be alive, what life actually is and what it's about. And we've become so fixated on this idea of saving lives. When saving lives has become prolonging biological life for just a few months, in the vast majority of cases, among very, very elderly people. And the other side of that equation has been the vast swathe of destruction of human life from the very youngest all the way through. I mean, human beings are not just living cells. We're not just biologically alive. Human beings, and this is where the Christian worldview, I think, is so vital in all of this, because Christianity teaches us that human beings are made in the image of God. We are relational beings. We're made for a relationship with God. We're made for relationships with one another. We're made for responsibility over the animal kingdom. The response of the governments in this situation has totally overturned that. It has not recognized that there's a spiritual dimension to life. It's not recognized the vital relational aspect of life. We've sundered people's relationships with huge effect. And we've coerced human beings and treated them like animals to be herded around and coerced into certain behavior. So all of that is reversing what it means to be human. And that is hugely, hugely damaging for society. And I think that is why Christian leaders are standing up and saying, no, we must argue for true humanity, not for this kind of vitiated view of it, which is now being forced upon us.
You mentioned how a lot of the people who have sadly died are old already, and it might be that it's just prolonging their life by a few months. I mean, in another big moral controversy of euthanasia and voluntary death, the Christian worldview takes the opposite stance on that, that every day is precious and life is a gift, and that to say that people are old and it's just a few months is a deeply non-Christian view. So what would you say to that?
No, I'm not. I'm absolutely not. Let me be very clear. I'm absolutely not saying that the life of old people doesn't matter. I'm absolutely not saying that just because you're old, your life is less important. Absolutely not. But we do have to be realistic about this. And Christian theology recognizes that death happens to all. And death comes to every one of us. And death will come to us. And the older you get, the higher your likelihood of death. I mean, this is where we're getting so confused. So during the lockdown, when we hit the figure of 100,000 deaths related to COVID, in whatever way that is related to COVID. I pointed out to our congregation that we have now had 220,000 abortions carried out during this year of lockdown, which is more than double the number, which has taken away the entire life of these human beings. And yet, government was making absolutely sure that the one thing that did not suffer during lockdown was people's access to abortion, that home abortion could be carried out. And in fact, the law's been liberalized and it's been made permanent on that. And in other countries like New Zealand, the most liberal abortion laws in the world have been passed during this time of lockdown. So there is an extraordinary confusion here and a corruption of the whole understanding of the value of human life. And it is as Christian theologians that we're saying all life is valuable, but we must recognize reality, and we must recognize that people, when they're very, very old, will die of something. And in order to preserve that life in an artificial way, at the expense of vast loss of life among others, is itself deeply immoral.
Jamie.
Yeah, I think this is deeply dangerous beyond what we've already seen over the past 12 months. And I'd cite as evidence of this extraordinary interview that was given by Edwina Curry. I think it was last week it was a morning program. But she was essentially saying that people who are not vaccinated, she said, and I quote, they should exercise their freedom by staying at home. And then she said that she didn't want them anywhere near her. She didn't want them in her train carriage. She didn't want them standing next to her at the theatre bar. She didn't want them standing next to her at the theatre, and so on and so forth. And this kind of language should be very, very frightening to anybody who knows anything about, for example, 1930s Germany or any other country where there has been discrimination, which has declined into violence and even genocide. This is very, very dangerous language. And the way that the government are trying to use the threat of vaccine passports to coerce people is creating a de facto underclass, an other class, which is apt to be hated, discriminated against, and potentially even to be persecuted through violence. And we need to be very, very careful about this kind of language, because it's deeply, deeply dangerous.
William, let's come back to you. I mean, it's important to be clear. Is this a group of people who have ethical concerns about vaccine passports, or is it actually a group of church leaders who also don't really buy into the vaccine program, full stop?
No, I think it's the former, very clearly. It's almost impossible to speak about vaccines at all without being labelled anti-vaxxer. I was a medical doctor before I was ordained. I'm not an anti-vaxxer at all. I'm very pro-vaccines. But on this particular issue, there are complications and there are difficulties. If I can just say a word about the ethical issue, which you asked about. There are Christians, I don't know the number, but there are significant numbers of Christians who have significant conscience issues with vaccines and perhaps with other medications because of the involvement of fetal stem cells. Now, different vaccines use these in different ways, so it's really quite a complicated picture. Some of them actually use new fetal stem cells, and that is much more problematic in my view. Some of them, the majority of them, use very old cell lines resulting from aborted fetal tissue from many decades ago. But there are Christians, and there are significant Christian leaders who have written about this and argued and said that they will not take the vaccine because of that, and they think that other Christians shouldn't. That's not my view. I don't share that view. I think that if you go down that hole, it becomes very difficult to justify taking all kinds of medications because of things that have been done many decades ago. And I think the appropriating of things now, which involve more dubious practices in the past, is not necessarily ethically problematic. But there are some people who feel that very, very strongly. And the crucial issue, as far as Christian churches are concerned, is am I to say to somebody like that, who is in obedience to their conscience, and as they say it, in obedience to the command of Jesus Christ not to take life, refusing a vaccine, am I to say to them, well, then you cannot come into the Church of Jesus Christ? Your obedience to Jesus prevents you from coming into worship.
Jamie, let me come to you for a final thought, if I may. Do you think that the science that we've been talking about so much in the past year has almost got a religious flavor these days, and that you're up against a kind of parallel church?
Yeah, absolutely. I consider it to be an alternative competing religion in its most extreme form. I mean, we've had very, very religious language used by our leaders. I think one of the key ones for me was when Matt Hancock spoke about injecting hope into the arms of millions. And we've had depictions of the vaccine as a kind of a shrouded figure at the end of a long, dark tunnel, against the light, as though the vaccine is Christ. And there have been various other parallels as well. And so, as ministers of the gospel, our message is not stay at home, stay safe. It is that the only salvation is Christ. He's the only one who can save us from death. So if people want to take a vaccine because it will protect them, and they believe that, and they've looked into it and they feel it's right for them, that's great. That's their decision, and they can do that. But as ministers of the gospel, our message is that ultimately Jesus is our saviour and not primarily a vaccine or indeed any medical treatment.
Jamie Franklin and William Phillip, the Reverend Doctors both, just to give you your proper titles, thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
Thanks so much, Billy.
Thank you.
That was the Reverend Dr. William Phillip, Minister of the Tron Church in Glasgow, and the Reverend Dr. Jamie Franklin, Curate of St. George in the Meadows in Nottingham, representatives there of 1,200 church leaders who signed a letter directed to Boris Johnson in the past couple of days, putting their foot down on the topic of vaccine passports. And we got into quite a widespread discussion there of the ethics and the role of religious leaders in controversies like this. I thought that was really interesting. Thanks to them. I hope you found it interesting also. This was Lockdown TV.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.